Thank you, Zev. Okay, so I will be talking about a new application of random metric theory, precisely to computing entanglement in quantum spin chains, and we believe it's interesting and promising for two reasons. Firstly, it allows this new technique allow to compute quantities to an extent that previously people couldn't do. And secondly, because of its connections, unexpected when we began this work, to the theory of critical phenomena in one-dimensional lattice system, in particular to the conformal theory aspect of the subject. So I will be talking about entanglement, and I will be saying in a few minutes what it is. And but before saying then, let me say that somehow it can be described briefly as the ability of quantum mechanics of exhibiting correlations that cannot be accounted for by classical mechanics. And although physicists have been known this aspect for over 7 decades, it has gained a lot of importance in the last 10 or 15 years because of its relevance in manipulating quantum information. So, to begin with, I will be considering a physical system, a particular physical system that is made of two subsystems. So I take two physical systems that I will denote by P and Q, and I put them together. Now, all the physical information in quantum mechanics is contained in vectors in Hilbert spaces that, for the purpose of this talk, we can consider to be finite. So just finite linear complex spaces. And because I have a Hilbert space associated to each of its subsystems, the Hilbert space of the total system is just the direct product of the two Hilbert spaces. And this system is technically called a bipartite system. And then we consider a vector. It's just a state that belongs to the vector. And what entanglement tells you, it tells you somehow as the physics information contained in psi is shared between P and Q. In particular, the precise definition is the following. A state in psi is entangled if it cannot be expressed as a direct product of a vector belonging for two vectors belonging respectively one to HP and the other to HQ. In another word, if I make a measure, if one of the two observers in P and Q makes a measure, which just means projecting in some subspace of HQ, then if this is the case, then the other observer, P or Q, doesn't know what the other does. So to give you an example, if the Hilbert space is the direct product of two-dimensional spaces, C2, and a base of C2 is just E1 and E2, then the vector E1, E2 times E2 is not entangled, while this one is. So, in physics, it is important to quantify a physical quantity like entropy and energy. And so, is in this context important to be able to measure or quantify entangled. And this is an open problem, and is not know how to do it in general. But for the simple case that I will be considering, that is a bipartite system, and where I only deal with one vector at a time, that is a pure system, people know how to do it. And the measure or the entropy of entangled for a pure state, that is just a single state, is given by, if I introduce the density matrix, which I won't say much about it, but it's just a technical tool that allows you to deal when one has an ensemble of states. In this case, we have just an ensemble made of one vector, and it's just the projector, the density matrix, is just the projector operator along this direction. And the entropy and entanglement is just defined as this trace, well, I will define rho p and rho q in a second, of log in base 2. Rho is a positive definite Hermitian operator, so all these quantities have a meaning. I take the logarithm, multiply by rho p, and take the trace. Well, rho p is the reduced density matrix, that is, I have the density matrix total to the system, rho, which is just this projector operator, and I trace out the degrees of freedom that belong to the other Hilbert space, or to the other system. So in this case, rho p is just this projector operator tracing out the degree of freedom belonging to Q. And vice versa, rho of Q is obtained by tracing out the degree of freedom belonging to P. And the nice thing is that this entropy of this vector of C does not depend on the way I do this procedure. So this is what is entanglement of a bipartite system, pure bipartite systems. And I will say more what system I consider and what vectors I look into it and what I do with this using random matrix theory. So in order to do this, the total Hilbert space will be just C, a finite one, and it's going to be C of 2 of dimension 2 to the m, and I need to choose a basis for this space. And the way I do it is I take m boxes. I need to choose two m dimensional vectors, and the way I choose these vectors, linearly independent, I take m boxes, and these boxes can be either empty or full, and I look at all possible ways, all possible combinations, so that I can look at empty and full boxes. And then I introduce this operator, which in physics are called Fermi operator. So if I took one of these basis vector, which I can think of as orthogonally some suitable scalar product, I take J, M of this operator, and if the jth box is full, I just empty it with the sign that it depends on the number of boxes that are full before the jth box. And if this box is already empty, it will just give me the zero vector. Similarly, I define a vector bj dagger in the following way. If the jth box is empty, I just fill it. And the p has the same meaning as before. Now, it's not too difficult to see that in the scalar product where these vectors are orthogonal, bj dagger is just the self-adjoint of bj. And it's not too difficult to see that this operator obey these anti-commutation relations. And in particular, BJ's.
What was P there?
What is what, sorry?
P.
P is the number of full boxes before J. BJ square is zero. And the way I can look at a standard basis vector in this space is just, I can write as this product where rj can either be 0 or 1. And 0 here is defined as the vector that is killed by all the bj's. That is, it gives 0. Then I look at this class of Hamiltonians. I just take quadratic form of these objects. And because I want this to be Hermitian, then I will take A, in general will have to be an Hermitian matrix. For simplicity, I will consider it only to be real and symmetric. And because of the commutation relation that I've given before, this B here has to be antisymmetric. And the vector that I will talk about at the beginning, that I will be looking at, is nothing but the ground state, that is the state with lowest eigenvalue of this quadratic Hamiltonian. And the system, I've been talking a lot about bipartite systems, is nothing but the following. I can put this fermionic oscillator in a line, in a one-dimensional lattice, and I just divide this lattice in two parts. So the first part is my HB, and I will be taking about n of them, and the rest of them is the other part of the system, which I called HQ. One thing that I forgot to tell you about is that I will consider the topology of this system is a one-dimensional lattice, but is on a one-dimensional circle. So we consider periodic boundary conditions. So as I said, the way I divided this system in two, P and Q, I divided this lattice on a circle in two parts, and the Hilbert space associated to the first one is just this product from J0 to N minus 1, where again the Bj are my oscillator and R is still either 0 or 1, and the rest goes from N to N minus 1, and again R can either be 0 and 1. And we also assume that N, that is the number of the first system, is big, it would tend to infinity, but much smaller than the total number of oscillators. And indeed, we will let M goes to infinity. In physical terms, we'll be looking at phase transition, and when this system undergoes a phase transition.
Can you explain what is the Hamiltonian supposed to describe?
It's supposed to be class to describe M particles and fermions, so they obey the Pauli-Birch principle, that interact in an external field. So they do not interact among themselves, but they interact in an external potential that is determined by, in particular, by this B. Can also be put in one-to-one correspondence with spin chains, hence the title. So you can think of them as equivalent to a chain of spin operators that interacts among themselves and in an external magnetic field. So here's the plan, and I won't go through all of it. I look at the ground states of this system. I look at the projector operator along the ground state. I need to trace out the degree of freedom belonging to the second part of the chain. And I will only tell you that these things can be done. I won't go through it. It's just computation. I will look at this trace, and then I hope to tell something about it using random metric theory, in particular, not any average, but average over appropriate compact groups. And I will say more about it. So, as I said, one can always transform by using appropriate transformations a polynomial in Fermi operator into polynomials in Pauli operator. So, with an appropriate choice of the matrix A, the quadratic form that I show you, just to give you an example, is given by this spin spin Hamiltonian. So we have a series of spin, which I'll tell you in a second what they are, or at least what mathematically that they are described by, that interact quadratically among themselves, and there is also an external magnetic field that is directed along the z directions. And this sigma physically describes spins, mathematically are just a set of of these two matrices, of these three matrices. They are related to the Lie algebra of SG2, or to the quaternions, if you like. You just take an imaginary unit that multiplies them, and you get the Lie algebra operator Lie algebra realization of SG2 generator. And then this product, you just take the direct product of them as to construct this Hamiltonian. And as I said, they are closely related to the generators of SG2 Lie algebras, in the sense that they obey this Lie algebra. So I look at these systems, and it was done for this particular model by Jean and Korepin, who went through the plan that I described at the beginning. They look at the ground states, they look at the projector operator along these states, and they trace out all this system, and they obtain an expression for the entropy, which is given by this integral. I will say in a second what E is. Well, let me say it now. Is closely related to the binary entropy, and this contour is an integral in a contour chosen appropriately, so that the branch points of the logarithm are outside the contour of integration, so everything is analytic on this contour and inside this contour. And the most important object that I will be talking about is this determinant. It's a topless determinant, and what these people did is they compute this topless determinant that I will describe in more detail in a second, using a famous conjecture, which in this case is actually a theorem now, given by Fisher-Hartwig in 68, and it gives you the asymptotics of these determinants, and by using these asymptotics they were able to compute this integral and compute this entanglement, entropy of entanglement, to the leading order, and they show that it grows logarithmically with n, and in particular the logarithmic behavior is a straightforward consequence of eigenvalues of topless matrices. But what the Fisher-Hartwig conjecture gives you is, most importantly, is the coefficients in front of the logarithm. Now let me tell you what is a topless determinant and what goes into this integral. A topless determinant is a determinant of a matrix which is given by the following. It has all diagonal elements that are constant, like in here, that is they depend only on the differences of the indices. In the integral that I showed you before, we have the characteristic polynomial of this object, which is still a topless determinant, and these g here are Fourier coefficients in general of some L1 functions. In the particular case that we consider here, these guys here are Fourier coefficients of these step functions. This one in a certain region of the unit circle and minus one in the complement of it. And k, it just depends in physical terms of the parameter that were in the Hamiltonian that I showed you, which in this case is related to the magnetic field. So that's what Jin and Korepin did, and when we looked at this paper...
So, including what you're saying is the statement that you can compute the ground state.
This is Hamiltonian,
and it is given by... What is the relation psi of g to this particular g?
I can show you. It's not immediate. Okay?
You're saying that the ground state is built out of this particular function.
Yes. Well, or this is better. These functions is built out of the ground states. I haven't said how. I haven't said, but you can do it. You can compute the ground states, and you can compute the eigenfunctions of the associated eigenfunctions. And from that, you can compute, as m goes to infinity, you can construct these functions. So it's the opposite. Once you have the ground state, you can say what t is. And from it, you can compute the entropy. I haven't said how, and I won't tell you this or how, but I'm happy to tell you afterwards how this is done. So when we look at this work, one think topless determinants are averages over the unitary groups. And the immediate thing that one can think of is, can we generalize it to other systems except this simple model that have been considered?
Can you amplify why are separate, in what way you say that this is the averages of the unitary
group? I will say the next transparencies. I will give you the exact formula and will tell you what it is. So, and we say how, but these are average over the unitary group. So can we generalize, there are other systems that for these objects are given by average over the UN, and then given that why UN has to be singled out with respect to the other compact group. Can we devise other systems for which we can compute these quantities by averaging over appropriated compact group? And I would say in a minute in which sense what these averages are. And now the nice things about this is that using conformal field theory, the fact that this entropy goes logarithmically with n is quite a general fact. It depends on the fact that the entropy in one critical system grows logarithmically with the size of the systems. And you can say that the constant in front of the logarithm is given by, one can show it, is given by the central charge of, I won't say which all these quantities are, central charge given by the conformal field theory approach of the system.
Is the Fisher conjecture reduced to some asymptotic question about topless determinants? What was the Fisher-Hardwick conjecture?
The Fisher-Hardwick conjecture, because in this setting, is you have the symbol of the topological determinant that has either discontinuities or zeros. So there is Sigel's theorem that tells you that asymptotically, it goes as e to the n. When you introduce discontinuities in the symbol, then you have an extra term that goes as
called the Fisher-Hardwick.
Yes.
It wasn't done by Widen?
Well, we don't prove something about it. But after
the
conjecture was made.
Yeah, well, that's usually how this is conjectures made.
Okay.
He didn't solve the conjecture.
Well, it's not always true. There are some cases where it's true, and this is one. And so, in this case, it's not a conjecture, it's a theorem, if you like. And in some other instances, it isn't true. So the point that using these averages, you can compute the charge, the central charge, explicitly, and we show that it depends. It depends, it's made up of two factors. One depends on the symmetry of the system, and the other is not generic in the sense that it's Hamiltonian dependent. And then using this average, we can compute also higher order terms, that is the order one term in the asymptotics. And then the nice thing is that the averages that will come out are not just any averages. They turn out to be tau functions of solution of Pandev equations. And there's a lot known about these solutions, and using recurrence relation about this solution, one can, at least in principle, compute all the asymptotic expansion of this object. So these quantities are quite, these techniques are quite powerful. So let's answer the first question of Zev. If I have an average over UN, that is, I take a function that depends only on the eigenvalues, class functions, and is given by this product, and I want to average over UN with respect to Haar measure, which is given by this determinant in this case. One can look at other forms of Haar measure. There is an old identity which I think goes back to Heine in the 19th century, but in this form is, I think, is due to Sees, to Zego, that tells you that this average of this function over UN here is just the determinant of the matrix construct as I showed you before. That you take the Fourier coefficient of this object, you arrange them along the diagonal, and you compute the determinant, and that's what it is. And what we want to do is change Korabin indeed in one particular case, when you have next neighbor interactions. We want to put in correspondence this Haar measure here, or in a way the symmetry, or if you don't like this the symmetry, the functional form of this measure with the symmetry of this Hamiltonian, and in particular of the matrices A and B here. So one thing that appears is that Haar measure is translation invariant on the circle, which is reflected in the fact that one way of saying is that the determinant of the Teplix matrix depends only on the difference of the indices. So why just not do the simplest thing that one can think of? That is, take an interaction that is translation invariant. So we want the Hamiltonian A just to be invariant if we replace the Bj by Bj plus any translation where n is any integer. Remember that we are on the circle. This imposes constraints on A and B. So that we have to be defined by the difference of the indices. So there will have to be topics matrices too. But they have to be particular topics matrices because of the periodicity of the topology, circular topology of the problem. It is natural to consider this matrix element as just originating from functions over the residue classes modulo M into R, which are considered real ones, and because we want them to be symmetric matrices, these functions just need to be even. And then for technical reasons, which I'm not going to describe here for time, we also require that gamma, that is the anisotropy of the system, will have to be zero. So these are simple matrices. They are circular matrices. And with circular matrices, people can do everything, can diagonalize them and compute the eigenvalues. So that's the other question that Zev asks, is what is G? How do I construct G? Well, I construct this metric first by looking at this sum. I'll just tell you how you have to do it. You have to believe me here. You take two sets of vectors, psi and phi, where phi is just the eigenvector of the circular matrix, lambda are the eigenvalues, and psi is equal to phi if lambda is positive, and is equal to the minus sign if it's negative. And then I construct this matrix here. As I said, A is a circular matrix, so we can compute everything. The eigenvector are the exponentials. These are the eigenvalues in terms of the function A that I use to construct my matrix. I then look at the sum that I showed you. Remember that I need to divide my system in two parts, the first n spins and then the rest of them. I fix n, I look at this sum, and then I write m. By fixing n, I'm fixing the first n rows and n columns, and then I let m go to infinity. So I obtain a matrix. This becomes this matrix element here. It becomes matrix element of a topless matrix. And the element here, the matrix element, are Fourier coefficients of this function here, lambda theta over lambda theta, which is basically taken by taking the continuous limit of this object. So I've assumed that the Aj decays appropriately for this Fourier series to converge. So I look at this G. And whenever I have a translation invariant Hamiltonian, I have that I can write my entanglement, entropy of entanglement in terms of topless determinants, and the symbol of the topless determinant is a piecewise continuous functions that takes values 1 and minus 1, and the discontinuities are located solution of the equations lambda theta equals 0 if it has solution. If it doesn't, then the entropy is trivially 0. The topless determinant would be the identity. The topless matrix would just be the identity. This is, in physical terms, just the magnetic field is so strong that aligns all the spins So the correlation becomes trivial and the entanglement would be zero. But if this equation has solutions, then the problem becomes not trivial. In the example of Jean and Karepin, lambda zeta is just given by the first Fourier coefficients in this expansion. So what about the other classical compact groups? I don't have much time, so I will quite brief. I will tell you is that you can repeat a similar analysis. You know, you have an average over the compact groups. It is given by R measure, that is the determinant of some kernel. And this turns into determinant 2. The kernel in this case is just this one. And the matrix element that appear in this determinant are just given by the sum of two terms this time. One is a Toeplitz matrix, one is a Hankel matrix. And this Hankel matrix introduces a mirror symmetry, that is, suppose we have an ex-neighbor interactions, there is a mirror symmetry that tells you that if an oscillator interacts with the next neighbor, then it has to interact with its mirror symmetric with respect to the center. So I have to compute the determinant of this object, compute the asymptotics, and then compute the integral that I showed it to you. First, I have to look at what class of physical system would give rise to this average, and it's just given by, again, A is a function of over the class of residue class, and it's just the sum of a circular matrix term, plus another one that keeps into account the mirror symmetry that I've talked to you about. And again, these are not general Hankel matrices because of the periodic boundary conditions and because of the fact that I need A to be symmetric. So just A had to be real. And obviously gamma has to be zero because I can't construct Hankel matrices from anti-symmetric matrices using Hankel matrices. So if I do that, I can go draw the procedure that I told you. These are not cyclic matrices anymore, but they're not, you know, they can still be diagonalized using trigonometric function, and if one goes to the same procedure, finds out that indeed one can construct the T using these G functions that are given by this integral that is given by the proper sum of Toeplitz plus Enquist term, with G are the Fourier coefficients, and G is given by this ratio, and the lambda is given by this Fourier expansion. And if the problem is that until recently, well, one can do this game for all the other compact groups, and for all the other compact groups these determinants are still composition of Enquist and Toeplitz matrices. And I've written them with two different colors because one thing that one has to do it is computing the determinant of this object and compute the asymptotics. And this is known how to do by some result by Bazor and Herrard for the blue case, that is for the orthogonal group of our dimension, but for the other case is only conjecture. And it's conjectured by Forrester in a paper that appeared on the archive just a few months ago, 3 or 4 months ago. So the Fisher-Agri conjecture can be expanded to the, let me tell you that you can write the, this entropy also in these cases with an integral that is similar. These functions can be written in the following way, where phi is a continuous function and this product keeps into account the discontinuities. Keeps account of the discontinuity by this exponential, where if beta is not an integer, this gives a discontinuous function of the circle. That's just another way of rewriting it. And the position of these discontinuities are given by the solution of these equations. So what I was saying is that for Toplis determinant for the compact unitary group, Fisher-Hartree conjecture gives this expression here, where I won't write down exactly the constant term. We have a logarithmic term that gives a logarithmic term in the logarithmic behavior of the linear order term. For the other compact groups, we have a similar expression. We have a logarithmic term here, and then we have other terms that do depend on the particular groups that we're looking at. If one do all the computations, then finds out that the linear order terms can be computed. The important bit, that is the coefficient in term of it, has one part that depends on the compact group that one has. The exponent here is 0 or 1, depending on the group that you are considering. R is the number of discontinuity, that is the number of the solutions of the equation that I gave you before. And then what I'm not going to tell you now because of time is that you can integrate all these terms, compute the order one term, which again will depend on the compact group that you are considering, and the other nice things is that this average, as I said, are solutions or tau function of particular solution of Pan-Levet equations. So I'll finish here. What I wanted to tell is that for certain class of spin chains, the entanglement can be expressed in terms of average over the classical compact groups. Using recent, there is a one-to-one correspondence between the symmetry of the Hamiltonians and the hard measure of the corresponding compact group. And using recent conjecture by Forrester and theorem by Bazor and Herrard, we can use generalization of the Fisher-Hartree formula or conjecture to compute the linear order coefficient of the entropy exactly. Thank you for your attention and sorry for having gone a little bit over time.
Yeah, I'm actually sort of just curious about the different definitions of the word entanglement. I'm not quite sure I understood, just maybe at first, why you separated the spins into two groups and defined entanglement by further entanglement between these two variables.
So entanglement, you can compute entanglement. You can define entangled states for more than two variables. You know, if you can factor, if you have several systems, the Hilbert space is the direct, you can look at the Hilbert space as the direct product of these whole Hilbert spaces associated to each particle or system if you like. And then if a vector can be written as a product of vectors belonging to each state, is not entangled.
No, I think I understood your original definition. You want to test if it's a decomposable element, if you like.
Yeah.
And you sort of separate your system into a tensor product of two parts, and you want to see if it's sort of a decomposable element of one times the other.
Yeah.
And that's your definition of entanglement, although I'm not quite sure why in some, you know, what sort of application you have in mind, why you want to sort of use that as a definition. I might mention I sort of recently read a paper by Thiachko, who come up with a somewhat a definition of entanglement, which I think would be interesting to people in semi-classics, because it was kind of a measure of just how far a state was from being like a coherent state, and it involved the variances of matrix elements, somewhat in the sense of Sarnak's lecture. I don't see any connection offhand between the two definitions.
Okay.
Here's a question, really. Yes. Main interest in this quantum computation and some complexity bounds. Is there any such application that you know of even these simple amplifiers?
Well, the point is that people don't know how to define entanglement except for this simple system, except when you have two systems and you have a pure state. Then you can define it as a von Neumann entropy. But otherwise, every month somebody comes up with a new definition of entanglement. And there's no general agreement. And it is an open problem how to define it. And the point is that, yes, for these simple cases, there are applications where, you know, it is important to quantify it because the reliability of quantum information depends on the quantity of entanglement, on how you measure. And people don't know how to do it except these simple systems. So yes, there are applications, but the answer is that if one looks at more complicated systems, there's no general agreement of what the entanglement measure should be.
Thanks again. Let me remind you, lunch is available.